and welcome aboard the Battleship Retention. I'm Tyler Smith.
I'm David Bax.
And thank you for listening. David,
yes.
How you doing?
I'm looking forward to the springtime. It's been a rough, hard, long winter here in Los Angeles. No, but I understand it has been raining for like 6 weeks.
Yes.
I'm sick of it. I'm truly sick of the rain.
I like the rain. I like the cold, and I like when it's nice and gray outside, but it does get tedious after a while.
I would say the second you get a dog, you will stop liking the rain.
Sure.
Because unless your dog likes the rain. Most dogs don't like the rain. But when you have to walk a dog at 6 a.m, it sucks anyway. It especially sucks when it's raining, and your dog has a little boot because she has
that's right.
She has a bad leg, so then the boot gets all wet. You got to keep everything dry. So sick of the rain.
See, and that's the thing.
But
you're telling me that, and to me, that just sounds adorable.
Oh, it is adorable. She's okay. The sweetest. But in keeping with this, look forward to finally getting some warm weather here in Los Angeles. It did snow. We didn't talk about it.
Yeah, I was in Rancho Cucamonga, and for about 15 minutes, I was in my car. I was like, what? And because I don't associate snow with California, despite Rancho being kind of near the hills, stuff was falling as I was walking to my car, and I was like, is it raining? No, this isn't rain. It's not hail either. What is this?
There's no current forest fire, so it can't be ash.
Yeah. I've lived in snowy climates. I know what snow is, but my brain wouldn't connect it. And then when I realized that's what it was, I was like, okay, well, I guess it's all over.
I was bummed I missed the snow. I'm bummed this week I haven't seen any of the painted lady butterflies. Have you seen the butterflies?
No.
They're all over the place, apparently.
Apparently. They don't make their way to North Hills that often.
Yeah, I guess not. My favorite thing with snow, though, is if you go up to like Big Bear or like Arrowhead or whatever, where it actually does snow and your car's there while it snows, then you get to drive down the mountain and then you're in San Bernardino driving around in 70 degree weather with snow on your car, and you're practically causing accidents. People are giving you weird looks. I love that. But no, in keeping with this warmer weather, we have a postcard. We love when our listeners send us postcards. You can find our PO box on the website. On the website. And this is from our friend Peter, who sends us postcards all the time. We met him at our 10 year anniversary.
That's right.
Party at the Tonga Hut,
which was 2 years ago.
I guess so.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't a 10 year anniversary party. It was a 500 episode.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, yeah.
Yes. So
which was
more than 2 years. Yeah. A year and a half. Yeah. And so he sent us a picture of Red Rock Canyon. Not that I want to give away this guy's location. Hopefully he's moved on by then. Right. I want people stalking Peter through the state of Colorado. Wait, is that where Red Rock is? No, Red Rock's in Nevada. Right.
And you just gave it away again. I mean, literally, you could have gone with Colorado and gotten away with it.
And he has a question. He was trying to think of how many actors have been in both Marvel and DC movies. I don't know. He came up with a bunch. I'm not good at that sort of thing.
I mean, does he mean like the current slate of DC movies?
No, nor does he mean the current slate of Marvel movies because he includes Ben Affleck for Daredevil.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a Marvel movie. So anyway, that's a fun exercise that you're talking to the wrong person, Peter. I'm not good at.
Yeah.
I haven't seen half of the movies.
If we were to do that exercise right now, it would just be a lot of silence as I'm just sitting and thinking. That's something that I'll do off mic.
Yeah.
I can think of two immediately, and then I'd have to.
What do you got?
Keaton and Affleck.
That's true.
Yeah.
Because for some reason, maybe it's because of the Sony connection, I always forget about Spider-Man Homecoming as part of the MCU, even though it absolutely is,
but
it just never registers to me.
Well, here's another one that I really did think of. It's the first one on his list that Josh Brolin was in two Marvel movies, Deadpool 2 and Avengers Infinity War, and I guess he'll be in Endgame as well. He was also Jonah Hex.
What if he isn't? What if he's not an Endgame at all? What the hell happened here?
Just a bunch of therapy.
Yeah,
sessions.
They just keep talking about him, but nobody sees him.
I mean, I have heard, not that this would still mean he's in the movie, but I have heard, and I guess spoilers for Infinity War at this point.
Infinity War. That one I saw. Okay, I don't want to hear the other.
I have heard the fan theory that scene of him at the end is actually him in some sort of afterlife, that he actually snapped himself out of existence.
Oh,
and
that's absolutely not going to happen, but that'd be awesome.
Yeah, that's a fun one.
Neat idea.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, so there's a bunch. Recent addition. See, now I'm looking at his list. Willem Dafoe was in Spider-Man movies and recently in Aquaman. So,
Okay. And you did mention, yes, Josh Brolin was in Jonah Hex. Not that anybody remembers at all.
Yeah.
It was a complete bust, but I'm glad he found his legs.
That's always my reaction, my rebuttal to the idea when certain types of fans or studios get the idea like, oh, Catwoman bombed, we can't make female superhero movies. It's like they kept making movies after Jonah Hex based on comics. Yeah. Like it doesn't have anything to do with the gender.
Or they just kept making movies in general after Jonah Hex.
I shouldn't say I didn't see Jonah Hex.
They would have shut it down at that point, right? Just,
the industry kind of looks inward and they're like, you know what? What are we doing here?
Let's change this name to Nader and then we're done.
Let's pay some bills.
Absolutely. Okay, so this episode is brought to you by Mubi, a curated streaming service showing exceptional films from around the globe. Every day, Mubi premieres a new film, whether it's a timeless classic, a cult favorite, or an acclaimed masterpiece, a movie you've been dying to see, or one you've never heard of before. There are always 30 different films to discover. With Mubi, each and every film is hand-selected, so you'll never spend more time looking for something great to watch than actually watching something great. It's like your own personal film festival, streaming anytime, anywhere. Currently available on Mubi is Abel Ferrara's 444, The Last Day on Earth, speaking of Willem Dafoe. This is a film that back when we did our short-lived video series at Cinephile Video, which they're still available on YouTube. You can check those out, but we did do an episode about 444, and it is a film that, as I was looking it up, I realized like it is not liked that much, but I liked it quite a bit.
Yes.
I think it's a really interesting view of like essentially in the world of the film, everybody knows when the world is going to end, and what time, which is 4:44 AM, I believe.
Yeah.
And you're just dealing with, and people are dealing with what that would look like. And some people clearly don't believe it. You see people at the gym, and other people, there's just a lot of people Skyping with one another.
Wait, so they know the specific day or they just know that someday at 4:44 in the morning,
day and time.
Cause I like the idea of the lottery of not knowing the day. And cause then every day you're just like, it's 4:43. You're like, what the hell? You're waiting. You know,
kind of now don't we?
It is the end time. Certainly. We can't argue.
But 444 is a movie that David and I both really like, so you can find that at Mubi, and then hey, once you watch it, head on over to our YouTube channel and you can see that review, which is at this point,
go to battleshipretention.com and search for it, right?
Yes, that's true. Yeah, you can find it that way as well. David told me that's called Synergy. Anyway, so try Mubi free for 30 days at Mubi.com/battleship. That's MUBI.com/battleship for a whole month of great cinema for free.
And I want to tell you about something I think our guest knows about, TweakedAudio.com. TweakedAudio.com is where you go for professional quality earbuds in a variety of stylish styles and colorful colors. They look great. They sound great. Tyler and I use them each and every day of our lives. I literally just ordered a new pair this week to listen to it, to use at work. And the thing I was listening to today, my TweakedAudio.com earbuds, I'm really bad with metal subgenres. I like metal a lot, but you get into some of the subgenres. So apparently, according to the blog, the metal blog I read, this is a crust/sludge band. I don't know, but they're called Wardens with WARDEHNS. And their album is called Now Cometh the Fowl. And I was very much enjoying it. And it sounded great on my TweakedAudio.com earbuds today. They're available at a low, low price at TweakedAudio.com. But if you use the offer code Pretension at checkout, you get 1/3 off that low, low price and no shipping charges. So yeah, no shipping charges. They do ship, no shipping charges. So go to TweakedAudio.com and use the offer code Pretension.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
I do love that, by the way. There's no shipping, but there will be charges. Just a heads up on that.
Make sure you got to go pick them up somewhere.
So we have not formally introduced our guest. Tyler, who is sitting across from you?
It has been far too long since since our guest, who looks pained to be introduced. At
Absolutely
this point.
Not. No, please. Okay. I'm excited.
It's been far too long since he's been on. He's a comedian and the host of the 40-Year-Old Boy podcast. It's Mike Schmidt. Mike, how you doing?
I'm good, Tyler. Thank you so much for inviting me. You've often tried to include me in your the things where everybody comes over and watches an hour of a film or something or 15 minutes of a film,
right?
And it just never lined up for us, unfortunately. But
I think we had you, it was years ago at this point, but we had you on to talk about Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah.
So. You want to know what I remember about that?
What
the story? Here's the story I'll tell about that. Is that we were supposed to, after Texas Chainsaw Massacre, someone was going to pick us up lunch.
That's right.
And so you were like, oh, I'm bummed that I'm not going to be here, or else I'd get something from Wendy's. And then your wife, Jenny, I guess just decided she was hungry and decided to go get us lunch early. And then so you and I got to eat spicy chicken sandwiches or whatever in front of Mike.
That was the best. Thanks.
Yeah.
And then never asked me back for 5 years.
We can't risk it again.
You should have had them. Literally should have been eating Wendy's when I walked in the door. I would have been.
Here, have a Propel. Mike, how you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm excited to be here, and I'm happy to do the show, and I always enjoy doing it, and I'm glad you guys are still doing a show. Podcasting is coin flip sometimes, and sometimes people move on and get things going on with their lives, or also there are people who wind up with 5 different podcasts, and they shun the one that made them a podcaster, so I'm happy you guys are going strong.
Thank you.
I don't even know what episode it's 620 something.
This is 626.
626. So yeah, we've been doing this for 626 weeks.
Nice.
Putting it that way is that's insane.
that's
nuts.
But that means we're only 40 weeks away from what we've been aiming for this entire time. Episode 666.
Well, you with your metal blog, certainly. I mean, Jesus Christ. And by the way, I enjoy the fact that you're like, I'm listening to Wardhens with the Here Cometh the Fowl, and it sounded great on my tweaked audio earbuds. I got news for you. Those earbuds are doing a lot of the heavy lifting behind Wardhens. I'm sure they sounded crisp as hell. And those earbuds are just straining to bring you the best possible mix of Wardhens you could possibly enjoy. Holy shit.
Yeah, I definitely translated that crust/sludge.
Awful. What a horrible mess. Yeah. And you said
they're a really good band. But.
No, all right, but here's my question. You said Wardens, you said there's an H.
Yeah.
So it's basically Wardhens.
No, but it's E-H, not hen. It's
Okay, then that spoils my premise.
Or Wardain? I'm not sure how you're supposed to say it.
Wardain, yes. That's
Wardain.
It is. I could see a metal band really steering into that pronunciation.
Yeah. Is there an umlaut somewhere? Anywhere?
Usually, in this case, I don't think so.
Because I thought, if Here Cometh the Fowl, I thought... I thought it was Wardhens, and it was Fowl, with a W. And I'm like, these guys, it's like a metal band about chickens. Dude, I'm on board with that. Just me and Gonzo the Muppet are like loving that.
Oh, well, you know, there's now, I don't know if two is enough to constitute a whole scene or subgenre, but there are metal bands about baseball players. The names of the metal bands are puns of existing metal bands. So there's a metal band called Pig Destroyer. And then there's another band called Puig Destroyer.
Oh, boy. Okay.
all songs about Yasiel Puig. And then just as a St. Louis Cardinals fan, I was very excited about this. There's a metal band called Kowloon Walled City. And now there's a metal band called Colton Wong City. It is metal songs about Colton Wong.
Who has the time?
It's exhausting
right?
to even hear about.
Yeah. You just want to nick a nap after hearing all that stretching that's going on. You could read through that premise for fuck's sake. Good God.
Yeah. As soon as I heard about Colton Wong City, and I was like, okay, I like Kowloon Walled City.
Yeah.
And I like the St. Louis Cardinals. I want to tell people about this, but I don't know anyone else who has the exact same mix.
I have news. You are the target audience. Yeah. That was it. They said, you know what? They've been listening to this for 626 weeks. And they said, we are on board. Let's find him for David. Good Christ. Birds on the bat and a fucking, is it like with a guitar though with the birds on? I can't even imagine.
The logo is just Colton Wong. It's just a picture of Colton Wong on the album cover.
Sure. Well, they did all the thinking with the name of the band and writing the songs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jesus. So thank you. I'm glad to be here. I appreciate it.
And because I'll say this, because I have been because I just watched Fighting with My Family. I've been thinking about wrestling lately. So when you said Crush and Sludge, I was like, oh, they were members of Demolition, right?
See, I don't get that.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about pro wrestling.
Or do you still watch wrestling?
Who are you talking to here?
Well, I didn't want to assume.
But Sludge was not in Demolition. No, it was Axe and Smash and Crush, as we all know. But yeah, I metal and wrestling kind of go hand in hand there. So yeah. Even now they have that bad, everybody gets some generic new metal song as their fucking theme song when they walk out to the ring.
Do you still watch it?
I know everything that's going on. I'll read the Wrestling Observer kind of every day, their website, mm-hmm. but I can't watch. I went to New Japan. I mean, you know, I was in Japan and I saw Stardom, which is women's wrestling.
Okay.
And then New Japan Wrestling came here and I saw two shows when they were in LA. And then I saw them the year later, they came and did a show in LA and I went to that one. But it's fading for me. Like I can't watch WWE because it's stupid. It just is. I'm when you're a kid, you suspend your disbelief, but you're also like, and I like violence and I don't mind the soap opera part of it,
right.
But it's gotta be better. You know what I mean? It's like anytime because they treat it like a television show and I totally get that on WWE. That makes sense. But then like a guy will win a match and then they'll let's go to the back and they go to the back and there's a wrestler like walking as if he doesn't know there are cameras on him. He's walking in and then a guy walks up to him and goes, hey man, you were supposed to say that to me. And he goes, well, what are you talking about? And they have an argument on there's a camera right in their face. And we're supposed to
see you there.
Yeah. It's that sort of thing that I can't suspend my disbelief that much.
Right.
And also I like violence and I like guys that are good on the mic and they have these really long winded promos and stuff like that now. So I mean, in the glory days, and again, here's an old man, but I mean, when I grew up, the guys on the microphone were so much better than the guys now. Hmm. So I mean, that's that, you know, I learned a lot about language and being, you know, when I watched the Ric Flair ESPN show when they did a documentary on him. And that's another thing. It's a 2-hour documentary. It could have been 9. I mean, there's so many things they didn't touch on. Andre the Giant on HBO was brilliant. But again, same thing where you're trying to compress a legend into an hour and 21 minutes or something. And it's like, no, man, this should be told. It's a big story.
Well, I think that's in a situation like that. And I feel this way about the Andre the Giant documentary. It's one of the things that kept me from really liking it that much is that I think they're... In his case, because of the Princess Bride connection, I think they felt like, oh, this will have a larger appeal than just to wrestling fans, which is probably true. But in doing so, when you try to go for that larger appeal, you're going to dilute the subject a little bit and make it less interesting. To me, the stuff that the documentaries that tend to be most interesting about a very specific subject is like, no, dig in as deep as you want. If I get lost at some point, that's on me.
Yeah.
You know, and if you do your job well, I'll be able to like make those jumps past the stuff I don't understand because I will find it. The fact that someone would find it this interesting, even if it's not me, that actually will be enough to carry me through. But like when you try to do the general thing, it tends not to work for me.
But with a larger than life guy like Andre the Giant, they kind of have to do that.
Interesting, yeah.
That's what I'm saying, because they had to deal with it as attraction, as human being, and then as crossover star.
Right.
So that's how you're trying to compartmentalize it and make it available for everyone. Yeah. But I want to hear about the nights in Winnipeg. I want to hear about him on the road. I want to know what it was like, because again, you get a little taste of what it was like to live as a giant, a freak, and be looked at weird, and he couldn't fit in a car and all those things. And, you know, you've seen Beyond the Mat. Have you seen Beyond the Mat? Mm-hmm.
I have not.
You got to see it.
Yeah.
Because I watched Beyond the Mat and I was stunned because again, it's naked. I mean, they show you, you know, it's essentially what the wrestler came out of that. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, the wrestler is the real life version movie of Beyond the Mat or the fictional version of Beyond the Mat. And, it was so great the way they handled it. And also one thing I loved about Beyond the Mat is when they go, they show the guys a long way down, or like that segment of Boogie Nights where they're like, all right, long way down.
Right.
And Coco Beware is fighting in North Platte, Nebraska in a high school. And I'm like, I didn't stand up there. And then another guy is in like another place in Minnesota. I didn't stand up there. South Dakota. I didn't stand, you know, literally all these towns, because that's the thing. It's the carny coming through. They have stand up or they have whatever, anything to keep people entertained in those smaller towns. And he's acting like he's just at the end, you know what I mean? And I'm like, oh boy, that was on my way up. You know, I went through those towns.
Yeah.
So, but you get Beyond the Mat is just, it's just phenomenal. It's a really good documentary. And also, by the way, it's, if you want to see a supremely unlikable version of the most likable person in the world, watch Beyond the Mat.
Who's the most likable person in the world?
The Rock.
Oh, interesting.
He is. He's just a charisma fucking beacon.
Yeah.
And he's just, you're drawn to him. And everything, you see that big smile and he's amazing.
Yeah.
And he, there's a segment where he comes off awful. I mean, it's real bad. And I don't know if he ever resolved it or anything with, you know, it's, I don't want to spoil it for you unless right. you want me to, but I mean, it's, but yeah, he comes off looking real bad.
That's interesting. And I feel like, give it a little time because people these days are kind of digging into other
everything
people's
gets, past. Everything
well, he's not going to get me too'd for this. I mean, he right. just, he, wrestling is all about taking care of the other performer, and wrestling is all about right. this sort of stuff. And he was involved. Well, I'm going to fucking tell
That's
you.
Fine. Yeah.
He was involved in a no holds barred, an I Quit match with Mick Foley.
Okay.
And Mick Foley was known for taking suicide bumps.
Yeah.
He got thrown off the top of the cage through, you know, just, he just amazing. And he's willing to take a beating, and it, you know, it's, he paid for it. Now he's gone through a million surgeries, but in this match, he's fighting The Rock in an I Quit match, and the big, you know, the crescendo is he handcuffs Mick Foley's hands behind his back, and he's hitting him with a chair in the head.
Ugh.
Because it's, you know, because back then this was the Attitude Era, so right. this was the era, this was violence.
Yeah.
And he's wailing on him. I mean, it's it, and the documentary is powerful because Mick Foley's wife and his children are in the front row watching.
Jeez.
I believe they're, I don't know if they're in the building or they're in the, or maybe in the okay. back. I think they're in the seats and they're watching it happen. And every time you see, hear the chair hit, he shows the kids flinch and the wife is about to cry. I mean, it's just, yeah. he's taking a pounding, and The Rock did not take care of him. I mean, The Rock made it look as realistic as possible. He looked like he was going to beat a guy to death with a chair.
Yeah.
And when they went into the back, you know, Mick's a bloody mess. He's covered in blood and they're sewing him up. And Rock comes in and is very aloof to him in the room. And he's just like, all right, man, well, we'll catch you. And he walks out. No, thank you for putting me over. No, are yeah. you okay? No, none of it. He looks like a guy who belonged, you know yeah. what I mean? Like, yeah, this is the way it was supposed to go, and I don't care. And you're just kind of in my way. You got steamrolled. You know what I mean? Even though they're performers working together, because that's the whole thing about wrestling. It's just a dance.
Yeah.
You know, but he fucked him up with this chair. It's bad. The noise, just the noise of it. You're like, oh my Christ.
That's the thing that really fascinates me. I mean, certainly there's a, just last night I watched Fighting With My Family, which I think you would enjoy quite a bit.
Okay.
Oh, you didn't see it?
I have not.
Oh, it's good. Yeah.
Yeah. You would really enjoy it. I feel like anybody, honestly, I think anyone would enjoy it, but I think anyone who's ever had any history with wrestling at all would enjoy it quite a bit. And so, you know, the idea of like wrestling being fake, and someone says, no, it's fixed. It's not yeah. fake. It's a very different thing. And when you see, and then there's a moment where a guy's on the phone with like a promoter and he's talking to a wrestler that he kind of represents. And he's like, hey, he wants to know if you'll take one of these, like, and it's like a trash can lid. He goes, if you'll take one of these to the head. And the guy's like, I don't know. Let's try it. And so he just like bashes him in the
yeah,
head.
Yeah.
And the guy's like, ugh. Yeah, all right, I can do that. And it's very funny, but it just, you know, it's like, just because you agreed to take that to the head doesn't mean you're not taking it to the head.
Right, yeah.
Like, for real. I mean, they might be pulling it a little bit, but at the same time,
well, they've done a much better job now, you know, yeah. of pulling that. And they, you know, especially with the CTE and the concussions and things, WWE, you can't really hit a guy in the head with a chair anymore. I mean, yeah. it's a really special move if somebody does it and you got to pull it. So it never
yeah.
looks as good as it used to, because it used to be guy was getting hit in the head with a fucking chair. I mean, it just, that's yeah. the way it was working. And there would be guys who would, you know, they would do it softly. I remember being a kid and being mad if there was a bad chair shot. I'd be like, oh man, it's terrible. and now I can't. I you know, again, as much as I enjoy violence and things like that in the portrayal, there's this thing that, you know, there's extreme wrestling. You know, there was a thing called ECW, which was fantastic in the 90s and stuff, and then it kind of got subsumed and stolen, you know, by WWE. But now there's all these indie promotions, and they'll do death matches and they'll do weapons matches and things like that. And they, I mean, I can't watch a guy get body slammed into thumbtacks. I can't watch a guy get yeah. a fucking pizza cutter run across his forehead until he's bleeding. Yeah, dude. Well, you know, David Arquette.
I was literally going to say, did you see that David Arquette thing?
Did you see the clip?
No, I saw stills.
It's awful. David Arquette is a wrestler. He actually is a pro wrestler now.
Oh, I knew that it was like, I knew he always loved it. Cause I think he's involved in Beyond the Mat a little bit, right?
He might've produced it.
Are you thinking of Ready to Rumble? The movie he was in?
That, he's in that. Yeah.
Well, that, Oliver Platt.
That I knew, but like, I feel like for some reason it might've been like he was referencing Beyond the Mat. For some reason I connect those two, but yeah,
maybe
I know Ready to Rumble. And I knew that I thought he had done like some like, sort of like novelty matches, but he's like doing it full on.
Well, he was involved in WCW a million years ago, and he actually won their heavyweight belt.
Oh,
and
wow.
It's a lot of people think that's the turning point when WCW fans just went, well, fuck this. And then they went under as a company and WWE wound up buying them. But David Arquette now will do independent wrestling. He actually does championship wrestling from Hollywood. He'll show up here. Because he loves the performance of it. Also, David Arquette is bananas, if you don't know that. So he winds up in a fucking match here in Los Angeles. This is like 5 months ago. And, he gets in a weapons match with a guy who Nick Gage, I think is the guy's name. This dude's been in jail for bank robbery, like for real. So he's well known as a guy who doesn't fuck around in the ring and that kind of thing. And he was supposed to fight another guy, but the guy, I guess if I remember right, didn't get his visa or something didn't happen. And so David Arquette's like, well, I'll do it. Well, he has no fucking clue. So he gets in the ring, and the big things that they use, they'll use the thumbtacks around the ground all the time. They'll use, like I said, the pizza cutter in the fucking head. They'll put it in the mouth. It's so bad. Ugh. But the one thing that they'll always use in these matches is, you know, the track lighting light bulbs, the very long light bulbs.
Sure, sure.
Okay. They'll use those and they'll smash them over a guy's head. They'll smash them over his back, you know, and it's just insane. So this dude, Nick Gage, smashes David Arquette and he's got, you know, the bulb shatters. Then he grabs Arquette, he takes the back and he lifts his hair up and he puts it across his throat like he's going to cut his throat. But what he does, unfortunately, is because Arquette is not, he doesn't know what's up with the weapons match. Yeah. So he doesn't zig when fucking Nick Gage zags, and you actually see it when he pulls it across, you see it catch and then go. And then David Arquette hits the floor and he's just on all fours. And Nick Gage just kind of, you know, because now you got to, you know, it's a show.
Right.
So Nick Gage has to kind of like walk around like, yeah, whatever. And David Arquette, you can see he's trying to figure out what the fuck just happened.
Yeah,
and he's holding his neck.
Yeah.
And there's blood. They missed the jugular, you know, but they did. He definitely opened the throat. And he's like, he's holding it. And he stands up and then he fucking flips. So he shoots, which is when you really fight.
Mm-hmm.
He tries to shoot on Nick Gage. So he tries to grab him and stuff like that. And he's hitting him and Nick Gage just kind of rolls with it or whatever. And they wind up getting a fast ending to the match. Like, you know, and then Arquette grabs a microphone and he's screaming at the fucking guy. He's just yelling at him. You know, you don't do that, blah, blah, whatever the fuck. It all blew up.
Oh.
But just to see him get the light bulb, you know, he goes to pull it across his neck and you see it catch, man. And you're like, no.
I'm glad I just watched the, just saw the stills.
I mean, I saw, they've run cheese graters over guys' heads. I mean, they're, you know, Mick Foley used to be the king of the death match, and there's a guy, and I think Onita, I think is the guy's name from Japan. So they would literally fight their dudes. They would have these boards set up with explosives on them, and you would slam a guy on it and it would blow up. It would fucking explode when a guy got blamed. And so they'd be burned and their clothes would be ripped up. And that's what Mick would do. Mick, you know, if you read his books, by the way, Mick Foley's first two books, it was phenomenal. So good. And such a peek inside the business. I stopped because the first two were about wrestling, and then he became an actual novelist.
Okay.
And I understand he's good. You know, I understand that the books are great, but I liked the wrestling content.
Right.
And he wrote a book about being on the road and how he worked. And you know, he would take his specialty bump was he would be on the ring apron, and someone would hit him, and he would fall to the floor and land flat back. And his head would hit the floor every single fucking time. And he would just do it. That was his whole, cause you know, everybody else would take a bump or a fall and get caught or whatever. But he always wanted to look as seriously realistic as possible.
I still want to know what his novels are about. Like, are they about like a professional wrestler who solves crimes?
No.
Like a kid, you know, estranged from his father or something.
you can't buttonhole a Mick Foley. He wrote a children's book about Santa because he is fascinated by Christmas. He loves it so much. He loves Santa Claus. He loves Christmas. And dude, Mick Foley's this fucking weird Renaissance guy. Like he is, you know who he's fucking great friends with? Tori Amos.
That's awesome.
Because when he would be in the locker room, he would listen to Winter, I think is the song. Mm-hmm. And he would just sit with the headphones on and he would listen to that, would get him ready to get fucked up. So, and then he wound up meeting her, and when he gave that anecdote out and he wrote about it in the book, and then she reached out and they became friends. But the first two books are phenomenal. But then he wrote the Santa children's book. But then he had a very well received novel, and I don't remember what it's called. I wish I could remember, but it's a story of a family or a man who grows up. I think there's a baseball connection possibly. But he's you know, and those two books are great. His first two wrestling books. Chris Jericho's books are great. You know, if you want to get a real peek into not only what wrestling was like, but also on the road and life and things like that. It's phenomenal to watch read, I should say.
I loved watching wrestling when I was younger, and then I kind of like so many other people my age, like Hulk Hogan was my guy, but I liked a lot of those other guys. And then I just sort of fell off, and then I tried to get back into it in high school. It's like, I don't recognize any of these people.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm not out. But I have watched a lot of documentaries about wrestling.
Oh, sure.
And it is just fascinating, like the process of it. You know, it's like a dance in one way, but it's also kind of like improv. Like you can't hog the spotlight. You have to be, you're responsible for the other guy, and he's responsible for you.
Yeah. And usually one guy is calling the match, you know, like, cause you'll see like that thing when they go to Whitman and the things, they'll be like clothesline duck under. They'll talk to one another in the ring the whole time.
Yeah.
And when guys become really good veterans, that's why they used to say Ric Flair could have a match with a mop and you would watch it intently because he could sell like nobody's business.
Let me interject on behalf of the listener here who likes movies. Let's give them a watch list, you know, so Beyond the Mat.
Okay.
Andre, is that what it's called?
Wait a minute, hold on a second. Did you just fuck us up? Did you just like literally go, this is a movie podcast, shut the fuck up? Is that what you just brought to us?
Quite the opposite. I'm trying to keep it.
On behalf of listeners who enjoy films.
But I'm saying, Tyler, you said you've watched a bunch of wrestling documentaries. Yeah, I expect you to name some of them.
Yeah,
so you've got Beyond the Mat, you've got Andre the Giant, you've got Ric Flair.
I think there's one, for the life of me, it's frustrating because like a lot of them have just been like uploaded to YouTube, but they're not like YouTubers that made them. So like there was one that was about Bret Hitman Hart. That was actually
Wrestling
there.
With Shadows.
Is that what it was?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that was interesting.
See, this is good content for the listeners.
Oh, content.
They're writing little notes to them, post-it notes to themselves. Check.
Listen, Tyler's done this 626 fucking times. Get off his back.
And so, yeah, the Andre one, that Hitman thing was solid. Like that was, and that one was like really unblinking too. Like,
also because they got an ending they did not anticipate getting.
No, they did not.
And it was great. You know, which of course that lends itself to everything dramatic and then works great.
And then there was, I think it was ESPN that put it on. It was like a big list. They did a whole program about like the 50 best wrestlers of all time. And they devote about probably 3 to 4 minutes to each one and work their way to number one. And it was really interesting because clearly in some cases they were trying to go like with controversy, like Hulk Hogan was like number 21 or something like that.
Tyler, he clearly was number 21, if not lower.
Okay, hang on.
I think we're getting into the generational age difference here because Tyler is a Hulkamaniac born and bred.
Right? Absolutely, yeah. I've got one thing to say to you. It's a shame it's not a video podcast, and that's
tear it off.
You would have been too young. Did you ever go to Hulk Hogan's pasta restaurant at the Mall of America?
Pasta Mania?
Pasta Mania.
I did not, unfortunately, no. I saw him live. I went to shows, you know, wrestling cards when I was a kid. I met Andre the Giant.
How's he doing?
Not well these days.
Oh, man.
Okay. Boy, he was doing good then.
I'm sure.
Largest human being, second largest. I actually Shaq bigger. Shaq's really? The biggest guy I've ever met and stood next to. But I shook Andre the Giant's hand. And I can palm a basketball, and my hand disappeared inside of his hand.
Oh, I don't
gone.
Doubt it.
Yeah. Just gone.
It's a little terrifying, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, he was coming to the ring to fight Big John Studd at the USC Pavilion, and he stopped to shake hands with everybody on the way, and he saw me, and he took my hand and literally enveloped it. It was craziness.
I met Dikembe Mutombo.
Okay.
When he was on the Denver Nuggets.
Yeah.
And it's a weird thing in the same way that when like people talk about, you see a movie star in real life, you're like, whoa, okay. I understand why that person's a movie star. And of course I had gone to basketball games. I've seen basketball games. And then you encounter a basketball player and you're just like, they just exude a certain aura, not merely because they're so damn tall,
but also like a grace. Like, it's just, they're just lithe and just so vibrant, almost like they're just moving at all times. It feels like they're kinetic. That's I know what you mean.
It's like they are. I mean, not to imply it's only this, but I trust you know what I mean when I say like they are their bodies.
Oh, sure.
They have to be so tuned into their body at all time that like to be in the presence of one isn't merely like, oh, it's a tall guy. I've seen tall guys before, but like this is someone who is just ever present and is a physical presence at all times. Yeah. And it's very, I was 10 and it was like, uncomfortable somehow. I don't know why.
I don't have any, meeting giant athletes stories.
Come
on. I can go the other way. Robin Wright is minuscule. I feel like,
oh, from Princess Bride. Okay.
Just generally, I feel like actresses in particular, they're made to stay so thin, but then think about like people look bigger on camera. Yeah. So famous actresses, usually when I meet them in person, are even thinner than I think they are. And I remember meeting Robin Wright cause I was a PA on a thing, and thinking, wow, she is almost, she's barely there.
Yeah.
I met Holly Hunter and we shook hands and I was like, I'm going to break you. I'm terrified to touch you right now because she's short and she was super skinny. And I was like, and I love Holly Hunter, but yeah, like on screen, I mean, of course they can cheat this, but she's, you know, like this height of Danny DeVito. She's super short.
No, that's the same reaction Andre the Giant had when he shook my hand. I'm going to break you.
So Tyler, was the Hulk your favorite wrestler then?
I think so. At the time, there were I liked Jake the Snake. That's a good documentary too.
Oh, you told me about that one, yeah.
Jake the Snake Roberts, yeah. Because again, another amazing, interesting story. Yeah. Just is from hell and back, that kind of thing.
And there tends to be an underlying sadness to almost all of these.
Well, of course, because they're
Jake the Snake is to hell and part of the way back.
No, he's back, man. He's good now. Come on, Jake's doing okay.
He was just on Joe Rogan's podcast. Make of that what you will.
Yeah. But yeah, but these there's a movie called I Like to Hurt People. I'm not vouching for it at all. I just know it exists, okay. And I believe it's about the Sheik, not the Iron Sheik.
Okay.
But about a guy named the Original Sheik. He was called the Original Sheik, and he was in Detroit, and he was a maniac. He'd literally bite guys until they bled, like bite their heads and stuff. And he was, but that was the deal. Like, he was the wild man, so people would pay to see him get his ass beat, but then he'd never fucking lose. You know what I mean? So then they'd keep paying because they wanted to come back and watch him get killed, but then the Sheik would never lose. And then he wound up having I don't know if Sabu is related to him or just trained to him, but this guy named Sabu fought in ECW, and he was a fucking psychopath. Still is. He just got banned from Twitter permanently. Because he's a fucking nut, but he would literally he was this high flyer who would set up a table and put people in the crowd. Just insane stuff.
You do and I did see the Iron Sheik documentary. That one is fascinating. It's one of those things where it's like there are moments where he seems aware and you're like, okay, so is he faking this whole thing?
You wonder if he's in on it.
It's he's hard to tell.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, you read about so many of these wrestlers like later in life. And like the idea of getting banned from Twitter, that doesn't surprise me at all. Like,
I'll tell you what, they
say so many things that get them in trouble, and they're usually very extreme things, like Ultimate Warrior, who passed on recently. But like he
terrible guy,
crazy thing,
terrible person.
Brutus the Barber Beefcake was one, and he like had like political aspirations, and then like said some terrible things, of course. And you kind of wonder, it's like, I mean, these guys have been hitting the head a lot. It has to make a difference, right?
But you made me laugh because you just said these wrestlers later in life. Hey, the ones you're hearing from later in life are the fucking lucky ones.
Oh, absolutely.
Because a ton of them die at 40 or 33 or 30 because they're all on fucking, you know, I forget the name of the pill. There's Oxycontin and shit like that. You know, because they're trying to get through their days and nights.
Yeah.
But yeah, I will tell you this. If you're interested in this kind of thing, on YouTube, it's a cottage industry now. Mm-hmm. They're called shoot interviews. And they'll talk to wrestlers. Wrestlers will sit for an hour or 45 minutes or 2 hours, and they will talk to an interviewer. And he will ask questions about the time Arn Anderson was, you know, in a fight with Sid Vicious backstage. Stuff we always heard, but we didn't know the real story on. There's the legendary stories. There was a wrestler. You would probably know him as Haku.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, he would wrestle under the name King Tonga. Well, he's still around. I think it's his nephews who are in New Japan. And when I was here in L.A., they actually had him come to the ring. But King Tonga is this guy. They tell these legendary stories about how he is... Any wrestler you ask from my era, from the, you know, the 80s, 90s, who's the toughest wrestler you knew? And they're like, holy fuck, King Tonga. Like, Haku, you didn't fuck with Haku. You never fucked with Haku. Bit off a guy's nose in a bar. There was a basketball team, like, just in the, they went to, like, a restaurant in Japan. There was a basketball team. And some shit started, and Haku just threw a guy out a fucking window. Like, there's like, that thing where he didn't, they don't, Ken Patera, you remember Ken Patera?
Name sounds familiar.
Yeah, he was a guy, he feuded with Hogan for a while. He was in Bobby Heenan's family, and then he actually went, they turned this into a storyline. But he was with a guy named Mr. Saito. There was Mr. Fuji and Mr. Saito. They were tag team champions. Well, Mr. Saito and Ken Patera, this is legit. They were in Wisconsin, and after the matches, they went to go to McDonald's because they wanted to eat. So McDonald's was closed. And Ken Patera is just like, well, fuck, you guys, you have food. I can see food on the goddamn shelf. Just give us the food. We'll pay you whatever the fuck. You're going to throw it out. And they're just like, no. And imagine, you know, Ken Patera was an Olympic power lifter. Okay, yeah. So he's a giant. Saito is just a fucking monster. And Saito doesn't speak much English. So they're trying to get the food, and they wouldn't let him in the door. So
I assume cooler heads prevailed, right?
Well, of course. Why else would I tell this story? And then they politely nodded, and they went back to their hotel and slept. The Patera throws a boulder through the window. A boulder. And they go back to the hotel. So the fucking,
they didn't even go in and get the food?
No. Well, I mean, at that point, then you're like, breaking entering.
I've made my point.
Misdemeanor vandalism is fine. You cross that threshold, immediately things start happening. So they go back to the hotel. They're like, fuck, they're pissed. So they go back to the hotel. Cops are called. Cops show up, and they knock on the door, and Saito answers the door. And there's different stories from different angles, but I'll give you a thumbnail. Saito answers the door. It's a lady cop, and she just starts asking him questions, and he cops the whole Japanese routine. He's like, he doesn't know English, blah, 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 blah. And then she just starts talking, and she's like, all right, well, you need to come out here, whatever. And he just fucking breaks her face. He just headbutts her in the face, and they start wailing on her. So then they have to call all these backup cops, and it's Patera and Saito take on like 15 cops. And literally, this is totally true. They tried to hit Patera with a nightstick, and they broke the nightstick on his traps, his trapezius. Crack! And then they finally subdued them, and they took them in. And he wound up going to jail. They, you know, Patera did time. Saito went back to Japan. He's like, fuck it, I'm leaving. Yeah. But Patera actually did. He went to jail for, I think, 2 years.
Wow.
And then when he got out, because he used to dye his hair bleach blonde, and he was that, you know, strutting in the ring. But when he got out, they actually turned it into a storyline where he blamed Heenan for leaving him behind and letting him rot in jail. So he let his hair grow out brown, and he came out and he dedicated his life to chasing down the Heenan family. So they, I mean, there's no angle too shameful to be used in pro wrestling.
I hope the culmination of that storyline was him finally getting that quarter pound of cheese.
Oh my God, yes. He got a deal with McDonald's, of course. But if you go find these shoot interviews that are on YouTube, if you're interested in this sort of thing, and there's a guy named Jim Cornette who will tell the most. Jim Cornette used to manage the Midnight Express. Loverboy Dennis and Beautiful Bobby, the Midnight Express.
Okay, yes.
And then their theme was the Midnight Express theme. Mm-hmm. It was just one of the best entrances in wrestling. And Jim Cornette is on these shoot interviews, and they go, and they, he's brilliant because he would, you know, he was in the ring talent. He was a manager, and then he was a booker. And then he was a guy in road agent, and he worked for all these, you know, he worked for the WWE. He worked for every company. He knew every guy, and he would tell these stories. And also, he is no bullshit. He is completely unvarnished, and he will tell you his version of the truth of everything. He's not one of those guys who's like, well, you know, I don't want to get anybody in trouble. He's getting everybody in fucking trouble. And he still works in wrestling today. He just signed with MLW, which is a small promotion, but he's going to start doing broadcasting for them, and he might work backstage. But his shoot interviews are phenomenal to watch. And all these wrestlers, because again, the problem is like, my favorite wrestlers when I was a kid were the Road Warriors, Hawk and Animal.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And, but the thing is, when they interview them, first of all, Hawk's dead, so it's a terrible interview. And then when they talk to Animal, Animal keeps kayfabe, which is the, the behind the scenes, like everything was real and nothing. Sure. Yeah, that's right. He keeps that. Yeah. Like, he doesn't betray the business. You need to get the guys who are willing to talk shit about the business, you know, so.
It's, okay, so two things. One is, like, the one guy that I've heard interviews with who seems to have, like, he's a little bit political, but not in, like, the crazy way. He's just opinionated. But the one guy who seems to have kind of held it together mentally is Ted DiBiase. Like, he, for the most part...
Well, you probably know more about him because of your other interests.
Yeah.
You know, the other things you're especially... Yeah, I don't know how to term it. But, I mean, but yeah, he's a Christian, and I believe he's an ordained minister and stuff now.
I believe he is now, yeah.
Yeah.
And admittedly, like,
as tends to happen, he's like, yeah, I kind of needed to do this. Otherwise,
oh, sure. Yeah. Crazy. I got to dry out. What the fuck?
So what's up these days with the only wrestler I really remember from when I was a kid, because I was a budding metalhead, The Undertaker. He was the only one I liked.
He hung in there for a long time. Is he still there?
Yeah. He just fought. I mean, he can't fight anymore.
Okay.
But they'll trot him out for like a once a year match. And actually, they did a card in Saudi Arabia last year, which was not a good idea. But they got a fuck ton of money from the Saudi Arabians, and they were like, all right, we'll do this. They've done it 2 years in a row. But when they were promoting it this year, that was when everything went down with Khashoggi. Mm-hmm. And so they literally stopped saying Saudi Arabia. They just started calling it Crown Jewel. Crown Jewel, WWE Crown Jewel. And Undertaker fought with his quote-unquote brother Kane, and they fought against Shawn Michaels and Triple H. And again, these guys are all 50. You know?
Yeah.
And Undertaker, he has a lot. Exactly. And he has, Shawn Michaels would have had the hair, too, except he shaved it all off. But Undertaker is now he can't move. I mean, it's just, that's the thing. It's a very difficult thing for him to have a match. So they'll trot him out, because the entrance is still, it still lights up the building, the fucking bell and the lights out and all that stuff. It's phenomenal.
Does he still have the pallbearer?
No, pallbearer died. Died. Yeah. Percy Pringle died.
That's too bad. I liked him too.
He was great. Yeah. But the whole gimmick was great. It was because in the beginning it was stupid. You're just like, okay, he's dead. All right. That makes a ton of sense, but it caught on because the entrance was so badass. And look, it's survived every bad incarnation of storyline, to where he went from being that guy to being just a badass, you know, that sort of thing. He had never lost at WrestleMania. He had the longest winning streak. He had won at every WrestleMania. And then 2 years ago, maybe three, Brock Lesnar beat him. And it's funny. Go find that clip, because nobody ever thought he would lose. And then, because again, it's all fixed. And so they always carried him and he always won, and Lesnar beats him and pins him. And they start panning around the crowd, and there's people who just, you'd think 9/11 had happened. I mean, they're holding their hair, just staring like, what the fuck? And it's a famous clip of them, everybody in the crowd, there's silence because they don't know how to fucking react. But he's still involved, but he doesn't fight anymore. They'll try him out, like I said, very rarely for a special thing, but also he's starting to do a speaking tour. And he actually just took a thing, I think in July, they're doing, in coordination with Fight Week, he's going to do a live appearance. And they just registered The Dead Man Talketh, I think that's what it is, or something like that. So he's going to actually speak, because he doesn't give a lot of interviews and stuff like that. But yeah, so he fought as recently as last year.
That's, how funny would it be if he got up to speak and it turns out he has like a really high pitched
voice? What am I telling you about wrestling? Here's how old I am. I remember when he was Mean Mark Callis, and he trained under the original Spoiler, and that's who taught him how to walk on the ropes, that rope walk thing that he did. Because I loved the Spoiler, because again, I was a guy, I didn't know who the fuck he was when I was a kid, but he was a guy in a mask. And just I love that name. The Spoiler is one of the greatest names ever, in my opinion. And he would walk on the ropes like a tightrope walker, and then he would drop a fist on somebody or whatever. It was gorgeous to watch. I love the Spoiler.
So real quick, the last thing that I wanted to say in regards to wrestling, and incidentally,
I think at this point this episode is about wrestling.
It doesn't. I'm so sorry. I didn't.
No, that's not a complaint.
I feel like
we should steer into it.
All right, I have more things to say then.
And if we can mention movies, that would be good.
No deal.
Out.
So, in fact, I'm never. You know what? BP is pivoting. We're only doing wrestling starting at 6:26.
That's fine.
So being a big nerd as I am, I will sometimes go down that internet rabbit hole of like the worst toys ever made, like the worst action figures and stuff like that. So here's one like, oh, Punisher turns into a gun. Oh shit, the barrel is basically his dick. Stuff like that. Like look for it, you'll see it.
Okay.
But one of them is like, there was a whole line of I think it was F at the time. It might have been E. I don't remember. But action figures, and it was called like Maximum Sweat. And it was literally, there were like 10 figures. One of them was The Rock. And you could put, this is insane. Having to verbalize it makes me realize how dumb and idiotic it was. Anyway, so you could like plug like a plastic tube, which led to a little plastic like squirt thing. And like, I had an action figure of the Joker where you could do that and like water would squirt out of the flower in his chest.
Okay.
But it's like, oh, but it's acid.
Right.
But no, this is, you do it and like, you couldn't even really see where the holes were, but the water would just like just cover the action figure like sweat.
Like out of their head.
Yeah. That's it. It's like, you can make them sweat.
Yeah.
What?
I do really appreciate the toy design that you couldn't see the holes. Because yeah. I was picturing like Pinhead with his pinch.
Oh, good Lord. Oh, my Christ.
It's just...
boy, but think of the thought train that gets you to there. Oh, sure. You know what? Kids love sweat. Holy God. They love watching their WWF superstars just sweat it up.
That's the... they clearly went through every iteration of like, okay, kids like wrestling. They like action figures. These are selling really well. We need to come up with every single aspect of wrestling that kids might like. And they're like, fellas, I've got it. You know what? What? There's a common denominator through all of wrestling.
Yeah.
Sweat. Yeah. We want maximum sweat.
I feel like there was a Don Draper type who knows nothing about wrestling, but gave an inspiring monologue about sweat as a metaphor.
These kids are going to be inspired to sweat it out.
Oh, my Christ. That's awful. I mean, I had not seen those. That sounds terrible.
It's ridiculous. But I will. So I will say that.
By the way, Maximum Sweat is now the name of this episode.
So so you asked if Hulk Hogan was my favorite wrestler. I think it probably speaks to the type of wrestling fan I was, which is interested but still probably pretty casual.
Sure.
That he probably was my favorite. I also liked I liked Junkyard Dog.
I knew you were going to say, I'm not kidding, I was going to finish your sentence.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Kids loved Junkyard Dog.
And I did, I loved him at the time.
He had Thump written on his butt. That was the best, Thump. It was so funny, I loved it.
Well, I thought of another one that I remembered from a kid, and I don't know if this is WWF or WCW, but it was a tag team called the Bushwhackers.
Oh, yeah.
Butch and Luke.
Who would do, I just remember because they did a weird, dance walk.
Whoa! They'd come in and they would lick your opponent's head and all that kind of craziness. Yeah.
And what's interesting, I remember the Bushwhackers, and I remember liking...
Was that WWF or was that WCW? WWF.
Yeah, but I, and before, you'll finish your thought in a second. Before they were the Bushwhackers and turned into cartoon characters in WWF, they on the independent scene were known as the Kiwi Sheepherders, and they were one of the most violent tag teams in the world. That was their whole deal, was they could not, they would take a beating and just keep coming at you and bleed and everything else.
Like Sheepherders do.
Of course. and then they wound up in the WWF and then turned into goofballs, which is,
That was the thing, is like I liked them as a kid for a while, and then because I was a kid, I wouldn't have been able to put it this way, but in retrospect, there's no question that I was like, yeah, they lack depth. That was like my, eventually I felt like I couldn't connect with them on anything.
Yeah.
They were just goofy, and that was it. It was like a silent comedy team decided to become wrestlers, and that was the end of it. You know,
it's just a couple of pie fighters that strode into the ring. Well, that's why you, my friend, should read Mick Foley's books, because you want to talk about depth and connecting with somebody. He has, when he entered ECW, the whole point was he was a guy who never got his due, because he used to be Cactus Jack. Foley was, his character was Cactus Jack. And that's who he was in WCW, and that's who the fans knew him as, the hardcore king and the king of the deathmatch, Cactus Jack. And then he went into ECW and he was Cactus Jack, and he tried to, it's too long to explain, but because he wasn't getting the respect in WCW and all that, so he left and he went to this upstart company, ECW. And then he became, he thought he was, the way they spun it was he thought he was going to be a conquering hero there, but, he had written the book, and his son's name was like in the book. His son was Dewey, and there was a match, a cane match, with the big rattan cane. Mm-hmm. And someone brought a sign that said Cane Dewey to the because ECW's fans were rough. I mean, it was just the thing. They would literally bring weapons and hand them to the wrestlers. Mm-hmm. So they someone had a sign that said Cane Dewey, and if you go find it on YouTube, the Cane Dewey promo, where he actually cuts this promo where he's explaining how he tried to understand fans and how he tried to be all he could for fans. And then someone brings a sign, Cane Dewey, that's my son. And it's just, dude, it changes everything. And in this, ECW ushered in the Attitude Era in WWE. Yeah. And Foley was one of the vanguard guys. Brian Pillman too was another guy, but they just, that's when I lit up, because I mean, I wanted to see real stuff and I wanted to see it get real weird. Cause I, that cartoon shit when I grew up. Yeah. I mean, I you know, one of my worst, the worst moments ever was when the Road Warriors went to the WWF and became, because they were good guys. They had to make them good guys because you couldn't make them bad guys. And one time they came to the ring with their manager, Precious Paul Ellering, and he had a ventriloquist dummy named Rocco. And Rocco was the new WWE, he was the Road Warriors' new mascot. And I'm just staring at it. I'm like, you motherfuckers, how dare you? You know, these are the guys who literally put a spike in Dusty Rhodes' eye and tried to tear it out. You know what I mean? And but you couldn't market them like that because they were so over, you had to make them good guys.
Right.
So it's just, and I understood all that as a kid, but that's what led me, like you said, you pulled away a little bit. Well, that's what led me to pull away, because I would be like, oh, you can't, don't do that. You know what I mean? And but that's, I understood the business part of it, but it was a little disturbing.
And I had seen a documentary on Hulk Hogan, the name of which I forget, but he was, it was a very candid interview, and he was talking about Andre the Giant passing the title to him, passing the torch.
That's the Andre documentary.
But then, so he talks, he's said that a few times, but then he also talked about, like, the time came for him to pass the torch to somebody else, and it wound up in, I believe, WrestleMania 6, I know because my friends and I, like, paid for it, the Ultimate Warrior, who, as a champion, lasted only so long because Hulk Hogan, in retrospect, he goes, there wasn't much to him beyond just the craziness, which can be fun to watch, but people do need, whether it be a face or a heel, they need to, like, connect with them in some way. And it's like, an Ultimate Warrior, there was only so much. And it's like, he goes, so it didn't take WWF long to say, like, this guy isn't working out as our champ.
Well, and also, but Warrior, if you do a deep dive also, on this, he was insane.
Yes.
And he wanted all of this money, and he would write these long letters, and I mean, he's a piece of work, that dude.
Yeah.
And Hogan is he's a shifty guy himself. You know what I mean? So he will tell you that, but there's 10 other reasons why.
Oh,
you know?
Undoubtedly. Yeah. And it's,
but he gets to tell the story, 'cause he's the one who's still here.
That's true. And he's the one that, like, It is interesting that, like, because I do remember that my friends and I were super into Ultimate Warrior for a while, and then, not unlike the Bushwhackers, not that he was necessarily meant to be, like, comical, but he was shallow. There was a shallow.
Oh, no depth. And because they started to pitch him as unbeatable. So he would come in, he'd shake the ropes, then he'd win. When he won the Intercontinental belt from the Honky Tonk Man, he won in 30 seconds.
Yeah.
So, and the Honky Tonk Man, who had defended for almost a year and a half, then put him over. And then, Honky Tonk Man was furious, but he did it, you know.
It's so fun to hear these names I haven't thought of in a long time. Honky Tonk Man. Now I'm thinking of the Big Boss Man.
You know who it's not fun for? David and the Movie Listener.
I'm actually having a blast.
Do you enjoy this?
Oh yeah, this episode is so much fun. Okay. And I have another wrestling movie related topic queued up.
Right.
What do you guys think is the best performance by a pro wrestler in a movie?
Well, I feel like it would have to be The Rock at this point, right? Like, he's
the biggest star in the world. He's transcended into the biggest film star in the world.
Yeah.
But if you had to pick one movie, though.
For him?
Yeah.
Well, I'm a big fan of The Rundown.
Me too. That's where my head goes.
So good. I love it.
It's so good.
But I also, I cannot say enough how much I liked the new Jumanji and how much I liked him in it.
Okay.
He's just he's such a charismatic actor. Like, I could watch, and I mean, like, Rampage is mostly a shit movie, but I don't think, like, I won't see everything with The Rock in it, but him being in something probably ups the likelihood that I will see it.
That's so funny, because he go ahead, please, David.
Oh, just a real quick thing about The Rundown. I'm not, like, a gun guy, but I do like to occasionally read the IMFDB, which is the Internet Movie Firearms Database, in which you can look up any movie, and it will give you details about which guns were used in that movie.
I have to assume that's on a government watch list somewhere.
Probably. Yeah. If it wasn't, but it is now.
One of my favorite things from The Rundown is when it's talking about the shotguns he uses at the end, and I don't remember the part where he's holding two shotguns, and so to rack them, he, like, rests them on those, like, chicken coops or whatever, and, like, racks them. And then the IMFDB says, "Note: this would be very difficult to do in real life."
Yes, clearly it would.
I do think that's, I think that's a good question. Well, but
I cut you off, or you were going to say something about The Rock.
I go the other way with you. Like you said, it doesn't guarantee that you're going to go to the theater with him, but more than likely you're going to watch.
Yeah,
I am waiting waiting for a perfect vehicle for him. I can't, because he's, this is the thing, he may have transcended movies even for me. He's so huge and larger than life. We talked even before we turned the mics on. I'm excited for the Hobbs and Shaw movie.
Right.
I've never seen a frame of Fast and the Furious. I don't know a fucking thing about it, but that trailer, the 2.5 minute trailer, the internet version, not the one that's on TV, the one where he, where he mouths fuck you to him in the elevator.
Yeah.
It's, I was like, I'm in, I will see this the day it fucking opens, because I mean, I like Statham and The Rock is the fucking Rock, and I want him. It's almost like wrestling. I gravitated toward bad guys because I wanted to see guys be bad. Mm-hmm. And so in the movies, The Rock, just as they do, The Rock is the good guy. He's the ultimate good guy, no matter what role he's playing. And there's a thing now where I, you know, like with Richard Pryor, when Richard Pryor was making movies, they took a dangerous, charismatic guy and neutered him to put him in films.
Right.
You know, unless you're counting, like I said, Which Way Is Up and then Jojo Dancer, you know, because he had a hand in those. But when they put him in The Toy and shit like that, same thing with Will Ferrell. Will Ferrell was a dangerous, different kind of guy, an old school and things like that. Anchorman, you know, he was taking chances. And now he's the lumpy dad guy in everything. And he and things, they make them now the protagonist, where like everything happens to them and they go, what the, everybody's fucking Stan Laurel. It's like, dude, what the fuck, man? Just be aggressive or do something.
Speaking of Will Ferrell and Ric Flair, Ric Flair was the inspiration for his character on Eastbound and Down.
And that might be the last great thing Will Ferrell ever did, because it was fucking, he was, again, he was dangerous and mean and evil and over the top. And he just was willing, you know, they let him go. As opposed to now where they shove him in these movies where he's just like, I don't know, dear. And it's, fuck, what are you doing, man? So with The Rock, I go the other way. Like I want to see a dark, violent, like I'd love to see The Crow with the fucking Rock in it. You know what I mean? Something like that, as opposed to this, because I understand he doesn't. He's a monster star. He's Walt Disney, basically. Not that he was ever in a fucking movie or whatever the fuck, but I mean, but you know what I mean? He's a brand name. He's milk. So you can't pitch dangerous milk.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the thing is, like, he's a full blown star. I think he's a talented actor, but obviously he's limited by being him, which is why I think like the Hobbs and Shaw thing is going to work, because Statham is also that.
Yes.
Like Statham is only ever going to be Jason Statham. Like you call it Hobbs and Shaw, but
it's the Rock and Jason Statham.
Yeah, exactly. And so I do think that, people pay to see The Rock. I mean, I can't imagine him being, he's like Schwarzenegger in that regard. Like Schwarzenegger, he may have played a villain in Batman and Robin or something like that, but it's always Arnold Schwarzenegger that you're seeing. And it's just, you're watching that. He just has that gravity, not gravitas. He has that gravity that just makes people want to watch him regardless of what he's in.
No, I haven't seen any Fast and the Furious movies. In Hobbs and Shaw, which one of them plays the imaginary tiger?
All right. Well done. That's not bad.
All right. I'm glad I stopped you guys. I'm glad I stopped the venture for that joke.
Pull the brake on the train for that, for sure. But The Rock, I understand why he's doing what he's doing. He is the largest star in the world, the most bankable movie star, and he wants to make PG-13 movies because he wants to print fucking money, and that's fine. But I would love to see him in an R-rated fucking movie, like John Wick. Like if he made a John Wick, you know what I mean? Where and just because Schwarzenegger, he made R-rated movies. There was tits and there was swearing and there was violence and people blowing the fuck up and weird catchphrases and shit. And that was great. But The Rock is not. He's a bankable star in the most in the world. So he doesn't do that sort of thing.
But I also think in Schwarzenegger's heyday, that stuff wasn't seen as much of a deterrent. Like
Terminator 2 could still make like a ton of money despite being rated
12 and,
R.
11, 12, 13 year olds were still going to see R-rated movies in the 80s and 90s, and then Columbine happened. I don't know. That's how I remember it. I got carded trying to see Eyes Wide Shut because of Columbine.
Did you just blame Arnold Schwarzenegger for Columbine? Is that what you just did?
Not directly.
Good
but
Lord.
But I'm not saying all he's right. off the hook either. Right.
Good Lord.
If you go to David's apartment, you'll see a big whiteboard with a lot of string.
I'm sure.
A couple other, obviously Andre the Giant, Princess Bride. Dave Bautista has turned out to be quite an actor.
Yeah, you know what?
Guardians movies and also in that opening scene of Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah, you know what? That, I mean, obviously, like, And Dave Bautista is definitely on his way to being a big star, but he doesn't have the type of charisma that The Rock has. But you're asking, like, who is the best actor? Yeah. It might be Dave Bautista.
I don't know if this Blade Runner performance. I was going to say, I don't know if this is true, but I heard that they fleshed out the GC Blade Runner.
I did not.
Okay, so I heard, I guess, in the initial script, they hired Dave Bautista just to be a heavy, and the opening scene was just going to be Ryan Gosling taking down this replicant. And then they realized Dave Bautista could act and actually went in and fleshed out the scene and gave him more to do.
Oh, you know what? I just remember that Macho Man Randy Savage played Bonesaw in Spider-Man. That's my answer.
So good.
Bonesaw is ready.
Randy Savage is a goddamn genius. Love him. Love. Go watch his old fucking interviews and shit. Yeah. There's this one I just talked about it on my show like a couple of months ago. He comes in because Gene Okerlund died. Mm-hmm. So I was talking about how he had this chemistry with Savage in a way because Savage was, you know, Gene Okerlund was the one thing is he never betrayed it. Like he always played it like it was real, but also with a wink. You know what I mean? You could trust him.
Yeah.
He wasn't going to betray the business, but also he let you know he was in on it.
Yeah.
And Savage comes out once and he keeps going, yeah, the cream rises to the top. And he pulls out a creamer, like a little creamer. But then he keeps, that's the theme of the interview. And he goes, yeah, being Gene, when he talk about the cream, and he has them. And like a magician, he keeps making them appear. And Gene Okerlund just keeps, he's baffled. But he's going, I've never heard of such a thing. And he just, you know, just keeps pulling them out. Oh, yeah, I know you'd love to see the cream. Yeah. And he keeps making them appear out of fucking nowhere. It's so great. And he's wearing the fucking crazy spangled robe and shit. Oh, dude. So go watch any of that. And then I hear that Okerlund's worst, the guy he hated talking to the most was Savage. And I'm like, well, you never fucking saw it, boy. Yeah. That made him respect him even more because those interviews were so goddamn good.
Well, and also, I mean, he acted a little, but he wasn't particularly good, is Roddy Piper. Although he's in an episode of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, clearly being a like Mickey Rourke in the wrestler type.
Yeah.
And he's hilarious and he's great. But as a wrestler, like even though he was when I was a kid, he was a heel. He was just so crazy and charismatic, and I loved him.
But that's what happens with guys like that, you know. With because The Rock was a heel too.
That's
when he
true.
Was beating up Foley, he was a heel, and he was in the Nation of Domination, which was like a black power group essentially. So, but then he leaps out of the fucking screen, so you can't pigeonhole him and make him that.
Yeah.
And that's how it is with Piper. You know, Piper was a bad guy, but he was an awesome fucking bad guy. When he smashed Snuka and the Coconuts is one of the greatest fucking thing. First of all, fantastic band if you've ever seen them. But also that clip, just where he was the first guy I ever heard use the phrase, just when you think you've got all the answers, I change the questions. It was just after he had just beaten up this guy like Frank Marino. He was a fucking slob like wrestler, and he was making fun of him. And then he also beat up another wrestler. He was also the first guy I ever heard use the phrase, you don't throw rocks at a man with a machine gun. He had just left a guy laying because a guy had like smarted off and he beat the shit out of him.
Yeah.
And he goes, you don't throw rocks at a man with a machine gun. And I'm just like, that shit was what grabbed me, man.
And that whole the Piper's Pit thing where he was essentially like interviewing other people, but then would attack them in the middle of the interview.
Yes, like, that's the Snuka thing. The Snuka thing is so racist. Yeah. I will tell you this: if you go look at a lot of the stuff from the 80s too, it's very racist. And Piper was bad.
Yeah.
Piper, like, you know, there was a wrestler, a manager named Slick, and oftentimes, you know, Piper would ask him about his lips and shit like that. I mean, it's bad.
Yeah.
Okay, but Piper, dude, you want to see a fucking miraculous piece of television, piece of tape. Before Piper was in WWE. He was working in Portland a lot. He was also in the Carolinas. He was in, you know, there's his dog collar and chain match with Greg Valentine is like legendary. Greg the Hammer Valentine before he went to WWF. And he's got his chain wrapped around his fucking head. His ear looks like it's going to tear off. Mick Foley had his ear torn off in the ring, as a matter of fact. But Piper, there's a clip and it's an interview where it's funny. I showed this to my, to like some comedian friends. I was like, look at this. And they've all looked at me like I was crazy. And I'm like, don't you see how good that is? He was talking about, he was in a feud with somebody and I forget who it is. And he's very serious because Piper could do that thing where he would lower his fucking brow and just kind of talk. And he's got a beer. He's got a fucking beer in his hand, a bottle of beer. And he's just like, and he was talking, I think it was the Sheep Herders, I think. And he's talking shit and he goes, and he literally smashes the beer bottle into his head. It's a real bottle. He smashes it on a television interview. He does it, and he stops, and he goes, and he looks at the camera, and as he's talking, beer's in his hair, and blood just starts pouring down his face. And he goes, "You sheep herders, you get your ponies, and you saddle up. You bet." And it's just, and you're just like, holy fuck. He's so, you believe it. And also, you believe it because you know he really did it. Even the fucking announcer and the other wrestler are like, all right, I don't know. This guy just went to another goddamn planet. But that's, but he, those were guys who, they respected the business so much that they were like, this is what we do. You know what I mean?
Right. And that's what fascinates me, is that there's, you know, there's athletics, there's, you know, film and television and theater, there's dance, there's all these things, and then wrestling is this weird combination of all of them that requires such a specific type of athlete, such a specific type of performer, someone that is absolutely willing to, and probably someone that is honestly more than a little inherently crazy.
Well, you have to be. You give your life over. I mean, if you go, if you ever listen to any of the stories about Stu Hart, you know, training, that's Bret Hart's dad.
Yeah.
And they had the fucking, the dungeon where they would train people. And Bret Hart tells the story of growing up hearing guys screaming in the basement because Stu was stretching them, beating their ass and teaching them how to, because that was the thing, is you had to learn how to be tough. And then there would be guys, you know, it was a tough man's industry. Now, a lot of guys were, some guys weren't tough, but then a lot of guys were. And then, but then there'd be a guy, like if a guy ever got out of line, they'd have a stretcher come in, like Harley Race. Mm-hmm. Harley Race was the NWA champion, and they knew he was an NWA champion because in the old days, there were these fucking territories. And if the NWA champion came in to fight, sometimes the local guy would try to get cute. And like he would try to sneak away and beat him. And then he'd be like, what are you going to do now? I'm the NWA champion. Like that kind of thing. So they had to put it on a legit fucking tough guy who nobody could fuck with. Yeah. So that's why Harley Race would go town to town. And if anybody tried to bull any nonsense, he'd just fuck them up. You know what I mean? That sort of thing. And those guys, you know, they were carousers. They were actors. They were, again, on when you saw guys on the microphone back then, that's why I said Flair, those guys influenced me in such a way where I'm just like, the use of language and the fucking, that larger than life, it just worked for me. It always worked, you know.
It requires like a complete lack of inhibition combined with a boosting of,
well, the best is when they would let them be themselves, you know what I mean, because WWE, when they tried to make the sheep herders, you know, the bushwhackers, bushwhackers are fine, they're just trying to make money. But then there's Steve Austin.
Sure.
All right, so Steve Austin had wrestled all these different places, and he was the ringmaster in some places. He was, you know, the stunning Steve Austin, all that sort of stuff. When he first came to WWE, they tried to make him the ringmaster, you know, they gave him a fucking character. So then he started to be himself more. He's literally a Texas rattlesnake. That's what he wound up turning out to be. But and the day it turned, that it was, he was in a fucking fight, he beat Jake the Snake Roberts at King of the Ring. Mm-hmm. And at the time, Jake the Snake Roberts was, his gimmick was he was born again, because in reality he was born again, so he was kind of talking about Jesus a lot in his interviews and stuff. And and so fucking Austin beats him, and then Austin goes for the interview, and Austin says, you come out here and you thump your Bible and you talk about your Psalms, you talk about your 316. Well, Austin 316 says, I just whipped your ass.
Yeah.
And I remember watching it, and it was a lightning bolt. You were just like, what? And instantly t-shirts. And he was the biggest star in the fucking world of wrestling. It was because he was real. You thought, oh, that's a guy who would walk into a bar and hit a guy in the fucking mouth. You know what I mean? It's just, and that was when they started to blur the lines a lot back then. And so, but that moment, because when they let him talk and they let him be himself on the microphone, that's when they, like you just said, they've got to be all these different things. And sometimes that can muck your fucking head up. Ronda Rousey, who is a UFC fighter, is now in WWE. She's terrible because she's thinking way too much about what she can do. She's not a natural on the microphone.
Right.
What they needed to do was give her a mouthpiece so she could just come out and look tough and beat people up.
Right.
But instead they tried to make her this personality. And, you know, she was friends with Roddy Piper, and she was Judo Jean LaBelle and those guys. So she became the hot Ronda, you know, she wears basically Piper's ring gear. There's a lot of fucking talk about nothing. Get to a movie. Jesus Christ. I apologize. I'm taking over.
I think we're fine.
Yeah. We should actually probably have an eye towards wrapping up, but Ronda Rousey, I don't know. What was the movie she was in?
She's terrible. She was in The Expendables, wasn't it? Or Expendables 2, I think. Or she's in.
Okay.
And she's in also, she's in a Fast and Furious.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I guess I didn't see her in anything. But then there's also Gina Carano, who's
amazing.
In Haywire. Yeah.
She's in Haywire.
Haywire's a great movie.
She's in Deadpool. She's so good in fucking Deadpool.
Who's she in Deadpool?
I haven't seen the Deadpool.
She's the villain. I don't even know the name of the villain, but I mean, she basically throws Colossus around for a fucking bunch of times.
Yeah. Did you see Deadpool 2?
Yes.
Okay. So
It's okay. This is fun. Because a lot of the film people that I know were not really comic book people growing up, nor were they wrestling people growing up, which is why this is always exciting when to have you on, because it would appear we were into the same things. But you know, and I fancy myself like, oh, a smart film guy. But what I will say is that, like, I went to the critic screening of Deadpool 2, and even though his presence had been foreshadowed shamelessly, when Juggernaut shows up, the 10 to 12 year old in me was like, oh boy.
Yep.
I was so excited to see him.
Yeah.
And they did everything that they should have done, which is like, he shows up, rips Deadpool in half, and yeah, then just keeps running.
Exactly.
And I just really responded to
when
that.
They do it right, you're so happy.
I think that's what it is. Cause yeah, Vinnie Jones in X-Men The Last Stand didn't quite do it right.
Gave him a great line, but then it just didn't pay off.
Yeah.
I'm getting that from video games now.
Mm, that's right. You play a lot of video games these days.
Well, I have a Twitch channel, so I've been doing that, and I've been playing the Spider-Man game for the past 2 weeks. So Spider-Man was mine when I was a kid. One of the earliest photographs my mom has of me is I'm like 5, and I have a Spider-Man and Mysterio comic book on my lap, because Mysterio I'm so happy he's in the new movie. Yeah. It's time. It's just fucking time. So
he's the villain we need right now.
Yeah, exactly. So in the Spider-Man video game, I'm playing it, and it's that thing where you're literally Spider-Man. It's astonishing. You're swinging all through New York. You can go to the top of Avengers Tower, at the top of the Empire State Building, and they've rendered the entire city. Yeah. And you can go all over. You can go to Chinatown, go to Harlem, go to the Upper West Side, Central Park. It's ridiculous. But in the beginning, you're fighting. In the first fight, you fight Kingpin. Mm-hmm. So Kingpin's in the game, and you get a taste of him and stuff. And then later on, because he's got the best rogues gallery of villains, even better than Batman's.
It's up there.
It's for me. I can name you 12 solid Spider-Man villains, and I can give you maybe 8 Batman.
I also think that X-Men has a pretty good rogues gallery.
Absolutely, I'll agree with you there.
But Spider-Man,
But the thing with X-Men is that any of them could, like, a few issues later be a good guy.
Yeah.
Which is actually what I like about X-Men. Yeah. But all of their bad guys are, or other way around, too. You know, what just happened, Cyclops killed Xavier, like, and it just happened. It was like 6 years ago.
Yeah. Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
I think my issue with Spider-Man's rogue gallery is that I feel like, Up until Venom, and then they turned him into a good guy too because Carnage came along. But like up until Venom, I felt like he never had his Joker or his Magneto. Like he never had like the one villain above the others that he felt like the yin to his yang or whatever. Like, do you feel like people said Green Goblin?
I was going to mention the Green Goblin possibly. You know who? But honestly, for me in the comic books when I was growing up, I thought Hobgoblin was that more than Green Goblin. I got Green Goblin. I understand he is his Joker. That's how he's in the books. That's how it's painted. Yeah. That's the way it's supposed to be. They fucked with it in the movies and changed who it is and stuff like that. But in the comic books, Green Goblin is Spider-Man's Joker. Although the first villain he ever fought is the Vulture, if I remember correctly. I think that's the oldest.
He was like one of the super villains. Yeah, yeah. I don't remember exactly.
But and Doc Ock. I mean, I have to just finish this thought. I apologize.
That's
but
fine,
Kingpin's
sorry.
In the beginning. No, please. And then. And then you wind up fighting a lot of gang members. There's a lot of street crime, and you're literally, there's all of it, a ton of it. And I'm just going, man, like where, what the, you know, I really wish there were a lot more supervillains in this game. And then you run into Shocker.
Yeah.
And you're like, that's crazy. Cause I mean, I wouldn't even expect the Shocker to be in the goddamn game.
Right.
You know, you're expecting the big names. So you beat Shocker, and then there's a new supervillain who kind of is the mean guy and all these things. And there's like a city hall bombing, 200,000 people die or whatever the fuck, all this bad shit happens. And there's no supervillains. And I'm like, 70% of the way through the game, and I'm like, Jesus Christ. So I told my buddy, and he goes, just wait. And I don't want to give anything away for anybody's playing the game,
right?
But now I'm in the middle of the end, and oh my god. And you want to talk about seeing when you talked about when you sat there and you saw Juggernaut.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm playing this game and you see the Rhino charge out, and you're like, oh my Christ. And he's moving and he's talking, and it's just, it's like,
yeah,
when the 89 Batman came out, I saw the movie Pumpkinhead in the theater six times to see the Batman trailer before Pumpkinhead and to stay and watch the Batman trailer after Pumpkinhead. Because I just thought it was Batman moving on screen. It was the Joker talking. It was real. It was going to really happen after years of telling us it was going to happen.
Yeah.
It was me in a bath towel cape in my dad's chair when I was fucking seven. And I went over and over. I paid to see Pumpkinhead six times because to see them alive and moving is such a joy from something that you remember deep inside yourself. It just brings something out of you. And that's why, I mean, I'm caped out now on a lot of movies and stuff like that, because the problem with the Avengers and things for me is, no rogues gallery. Literally, they're fighting pixels the entire goddamn time.
Yeah.
And it's a drag. Like, I mean, it's all space monsters and stuff to the point where the best Avengers fight of all time is Avengers against Avengers. You know what I mean? On the airplane, the hangar. You did, not for the movie or not for the fight?
Either one. The fight between Cap and Iron Man and Winter Soldier or Bucky, that's great. I love that.
It's a great fight, but boy, when I say caped out, can we stop killing fathers? Can we just stop with the death of the father? And also, I find myself in a tricky position there where all of a sudden there's a perfectly framed video of Bucky killing Tony Stark's father, whatever the fuck. I'm over dead fathers as inspiration for any of that stuff.
Yeah, that's why you like Spider-Man. It's an
exactly. It's an uncle. It went the other way completely. But in that fight, I'm rooting for Iron Man. Fuck Bucky. Fuck Captain America for protecting Bucky. Fuck them both. He killed his fucking father. Yeah. So step aside and let him fucking take an ass whooping from a guy in a goddamn garbage can suit. What the fuck, man? How dare you? How dare you come up with a, now, I don't know, let's think about this. Think about this. I got news for you. I got a fucking 1989 version video of him snapping my dad's neck and my mom. Didn't he kill the mom too?
Yep.
Holy fuck. And I'm supposed to sit back while this motherfucker with his swishy hair is going to fucking tell me everything's okay? Fuck you, Brett girl. I'm kicking the shit out of you. You killed my parents. But Captain America's like, oh, hold on a second now. Let's have a chat about this. Fuck you. Fuck you. You fucking hostess fruit pie motherfucker. Sit down and take your flag and leave me to fuck this guy up.
I think
that's probably
this is a great place to button it up. Thank you so much, Mike. This is
Dudes, I love doing it. Thank you for asking me.
Honestly, a lot of fun for me. I want to watch all these wrestling documentaries.
Watch the shoot videos on YouTube. I'm telling you, you'll go down a rabbit hole and disappear.
Also, prepare yourself emotionally.
Okay. Oh my Christ! Yeah, because if you knew these guys when you were young and they were your heroes,
pretty rough.
Yeah, you start hearing about Raven, you know, fucking girls with Saturn in a goddamn hotel room, and then it's rough.
All right. Well, you can find us. You won't find those videos, but you can find videos and lots of movie reviews and other podcasts and stuff at BattleshipPretension.com. You can email us at David@BattleshipPretension.com or Tyler@BattleshipPretension.com. You can find the Patreon at Patreon.com/BattleshipPretension. I'm on Twitter at Davey Pretension. Tyler's on Twitter at Tyler Pretension. And anything you need to plug?
So over at More Than One Lesson, I still haven't started the podcast back up, but there are still other podcasts happening at the time. And our friends at The Fear of God, which is the horror podcast, they have decided to get a little experimental while talking about the Black Mirror. Was it Bandersnatch? Is that what it's called? Like the Choose Your Own Adventure. And so they essentially recorded two separate versions of that episode, and you can choose which one or both. So that's like fun. I like that they're trying to do
that's pretty
things.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, Mike, where can people find you on the internet?
Well, you guys can get me at mike@mikeschmidtcomedy.com. You guys can follow me at Facebook, at twitter.com/the40yearoldboy. I'm at facebook.com/the40yearoldboy. I'm at twitch.tv/the40yearoldboy. I stream every day, Tuesday through Sunday, 3 o'clock usually Los Angeles time in the afternoon. We go 4 hours, we go on 5 hours, we've gone 11 hours one time.
What was the game? Or did you switch
that back? Might have been I think that was God of War. No, that was Red Dead Redemption 2.
Okay.
Yeah, we
very
played that
things.
Phenomenal. That's the thing, is I'm spoiled because I started with Red Dead Redemption 2. I haven't played video games in 17 years, and to start with that one, now everything after you're kind of like meh. But I mean, but Spider-Man is killing it, and I played God of War, all fun, Resident Evil 2. But anyway, so twitch.tv/the40yearoldboy, twitter.com/the40yearoldboy, facebook.com/the40yearoldboy, and there's a podcast called The 40 Year Old Boy available in the iTunes store. Subscribe subscribe now. And if I can, one more. I have a YouTube channel. If you go youtube.com/the40-year-old boy, all 11 years of my podcast are archived there. You can go ahead and jump back and listen to year one, and then come back and listen to the show every Thursday morning. It comes out in the iTunes store. There you go.
Wow. Your branding is very consistent. Yeah. You managed to get the 40-year-old boy forever. Has anyone tried to steal it out from money? Like, is there a new, did someone start a Vine at the 40-year-old boy and try to sell it to you?
No, but there is another comedian in Los Angeles named Mike Schmidt.
Yeah.
And he is from the Midwest. And he did Rogan's podcast, which you know is a gigantic, because people have been trying to get me on Rogan's podcast. Fans, and then I had another guy who had a connection. I would love to do it, but this guy Mike Schmidt did it, and I didn't know. I knew he existed because occasionally I would get an email or something for him, but I fucking wake up and my phone is going crazy, and everybody's listeners are crazy, and they're like, dude, you got Rogan? Why didn't you fucking tell us you got Rogan? And I'm just like, and then followed slowly after by the, oh, who the fuck is this guy? I'm sure he's lovely. He's terrific. He's a doorman at the store, mm-hmm. and he used to be a public defender, I guess, in Minneapolis. So that's what he was on to talk about, was law and things like that. So yeah, I've never met the guy, but after Rogan's show, every day I would get three notes for people who wanted me to help their friend who was in jail. Like literally that nothing about comedy, but also like, I have a question about habeas corpus. Well, good luck.
Well, I think you're missing an opportunity here.
Certainly
all my friends said that. They go, you fucked with them, right? Did you? And I'm just like, please, I can't, I got no time.
Certainly there's been a wrestler named habeas corpus at some point.
Dude. All right. You open this up and I apologize. When I was a kid, I was going to go to Larry Sharp's Monster Factory and I was going to be a professional wrestler. I called them. I got the prices. I was ready. I was set. I had a plan. When I was 18, I was going to go to New Jersey, and I was going to be the judge. And I would have the death sentence would be my finishing move. And I would wear a robe and I would do the whole deal. I mean, I had it, the whole gimmick. I had it all fucking picked out. I told them on the phone, I pitched it, and they loved me on the phone because I could talk. But I was also a fat, doughy idiot. So if I would have shown up, I would have gotten my ass beat, but I was ready. But yeah, so it's funny that you mentioned that there was a habeas corpus, but I had the finishing, and the death sentence was my finishing maneuver. And it was just, it was great.
And you could hit people with a gavel.
Yeah, right? It was there. Especially at a time where they were doing those types of characters. Yeah. I would have walked in and been the king.
Yeah. Oh, man, that's great.
Thanks again.
We'll get you next time.
I was saying thanks to Mike.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Thank you at home for listening.
We'll get you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
This program is a proud member of the Battleship Pretension Fleet.